Hello and welcome back to Brace Yourself. This week we'll continue on with part two of our discussion with Dr. Erica Huynh from the Graduate Dentist. The focus for this episode will be all things job hunting, finding a mentor, and getting through the trials and tribulations of the early days as a new grad dentist. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
All right, so now we're going to shift gears and move the conversation into exploring experiences as a final year student and how to prepare for that deep dive into becoming a graduate dentist. So I guess straight off the bat, Erica, what are some tips that you have for our final year listeners to prepare themselves?
I feel like we've kind of answered this question earlier on in our episode as well in terms of what would my biggest tip be. And yeah, I would still argue that it is observing. Like, go, particularly in your final year, start making those connections beyond just your immediate vicinity of dental school. And start putting yourself out there, start familiarizing yourself with, yeah, what real world dentistry is like. And observing. I feel like you have a few more questions that will build on this. I don't want to jump the gun.
Yes, for sure.
Okay. Just as a final year student, what did you, like, what does, I know it's different for everyone and everyone has their own different journey when they come to look for jobs, but what is the timeline that you kind of had, or you think maybe your peers followed when you started thinking about preparing for a job and looking for a job?
Yeah, I think it's also changed in like the last few years as well. Everyone's a bit different. I know that dentists that I've talked to in the past, like, they didn't start looking for jobs until like November and December, right? Yeah, so that was in the past, whereas I think in more recent years, people have been job hunting a lot sooner. I would say the majority of people probably start looking around August, September, maybe around September is where most people are looking into jobs.
That's of their final year, is that correct?
Of their final year, that's right.
Launching off that, like, what are the platforms that students should look out for? Like, are there certain ones where more dentists post? Like, I really don't know because I'm in my fourth year, so this won't be until next year, but are there certain platforms that people go to look for jobs, or is it through connections? You know,
I think I mentioned this to you guys as well, like, off recording, that I feel like I had a bit more of a unconventional approach when it came to job hunting. I think a lot of people, when it comes to job hunting, there are oftentimes job ads that get put up online. So DPR is our biggest Australian dental forum on Facebook. So if you're not a part of that, it's probably a good one to join in. It's usually drama and gossip, but occasionally there are good posts there, and a lot of people that advertise that they're looking for dentists. I think other websites like Seek is also another platform where people will often advertise that they're looking to hire people. But another part of it is just, you don't necessarily have to go to the people that are actively advertising as well.
Oh, okay.
Okay. A big part of it, and this is why I keep stressing the importance of observing and just connecting with people, is this, that's actually how I ended up landing my job, but also how I ended up having multiple job offers. So I actually didn't go through a traditional, like, job application process, but luckily, I guess very fortunately for me in my position, I guess with podcasting, is that I got to interact with a lot of different people throughout the dental industry, right? Some of them were practice owners, some of them weren't, but then through, one, the podcast platform, but two, also just going to different events. So for example, when I was in my final year, ADX was being held in Sydney, and so I went to that, and then there was like a networking event there, and so you just got to meet people, and I met some specialists there, and then you meet other people. So I think just putting yourself out there and going to these events that people are hosting, so dental conferences or expos, if any dentists are running a session with your uni, which I think a lot of unis now host, right? Go attend those, right? So go attend any opportunities where there is, that opportunity to go meet other people, because you might meet a practice owner or you could meet a dentist that you then become friends with. It's all about connections, right? And you meet one person and then they might know someone, and they might have a friend that's a practice owner, or they might have a friend that's leaving a practice and they're looking for a new dentist to fill in their spot. There's a lot of different ways that it can work, but you never know those different opportunities unless you're in it. Right. Yeah. And so my biggest advice is, yeah, put yourself out there. Yes, you can go and look for people that are advertising. That's a definitely guaranteed way of, you know, applying for a job, because those people are actively seeking. But don't limit yourself to just those people. Right. You may go meet people, and even though they weren't actively advertising that they're looking to hire someone, they may really resonate with you and say, actually, you know what, we can probably make room to accommodate with you. Or even though they're not hiring right now, maybe down the track an opportunity opens up and they remember you, and you know, you can go through it from that point of view. My point about observing is that same idea, yeah. Right? Go to a practice and spend some time with them, right? You can go to multiple practices. I think a big thing and a big problem that a lot of people encounter is that their first time spending time in a practice when they graduate and they've landed a job is their first day of work. Wow. Right? And so it's because, you know, you've applied online, you've had a interview, you maybe come in to look at the practice once, but you haven't actually spent time. And the first time you're spending time there is when you're working, right? And then people end up having a rude awakening where they're like, oh, actually, this practice does things in a way that I don't particularly like, or I don't gel with, and the team aren't people that I vibe with. You end up finding all of that out almost too late.
Yeah.
Which is why I argue, just go spend time beforehand, right? Go spend time observing at a practice, shadowing another dentist. That way, one, you're building that connection with that person, right? You're building a connection with the practice. You understand their systems, you understand their philosophy, you understand their culture, and you can see for yourself, hey, is this an environment that I could see myself in? And then the conversation becomes a lot more effortless and easy, where you may talk to the practice owner and say, hey, like, you know, are there any opportunities for me to, you know, join your group in the future? They may say yes, they may say no, but you started that. And again, no now may not mean no forever, right?
Right.
So that's probably like my biggest tip in terms of that approach. And that's why, like, when I went through my uni, like, I guess sharing my own story in terms of how I landed my job, I think it was, so I currently work in Brisbane. So, context. family's all in Melbourne. So I was born in Melbourne, studied in Sydney, but now I work in Brisbane. And that was a big shift. A lot of people are like, wow, why would you move to Brisbane? Do you know anyone in Brisbane? No, I didn't know anyone in Brisbane. my boss, my current boss, Dr. Jeff Coe, was the first person that I ever interviewed on, like, that I ever interviewed. And we ended up building this really great relationship, and he runs a lot of courses. And so I would just volunteer to go help out, right? And attend all these events. And we just built that connection from that. And so he wasn't actively advertising, but I ended up spending some time. He's like, oh, you've never been to Brisbane. You should come up and spend some time in Brisbane. And so I did. And then I spent some time with the practice, and I really gelled with it. I really vibed with it. And I asked him, this was in April, actually, right? This was during Easter break of my final year. I said, do you think there's potential? Do you see potential in me being here next year? And he actually kind of held me back on it. And he says, you know what? Like, there is, but go and just focus on your degree. Go get your clinical experience, go and graduate, and then we can revisit this conversation later in the year. If you're going to make the move, I want you to be sure of it. So that conversation actually started in April. It wasn't a formal, like, application. It wasn't a formal offer, but it was just, oh, is this an idea that we could potentially explore? Throughout the rest of the year, I actually ended up getting, I think, like 12 job offers.
Oh, wow.
Without having applied to any of them.
Oh.
Okay. That's not to brag. I don't say that to boast, but that's, I think, a way of showing, like, the power of just meeting people and a lot of those jobs. So, you know, it may, what happened? I think one of them was a, I feel multiple of them actually were people that I just went to observe, right? And then you spent some time with them, you click with them, and they're like, hey, like, we've got a position next year. Would you be interested in joining or not? So many of them just happened that way. And then, you know, some of them would be like, literally what I said before, I'm like, oh, you know, I have a friend that's looking to hire. You know, would you be interested in relocating to blah, 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 so on, so on, like wherever it may be. So all of it was just through word of mouth and through just those connections and whatnot. Having explored all those different options, I then still ultimately came back to, you know what, I still feel like I resonate the most with, like, you know, Dr. Jeff. And so then when it came to, I think, August, that was the one formal application I did do, where I did write up a resume and I wrote up a cover letter and I gave it to him. And it's like, you know, I've done a lot of thinking, and, you know, this is something that I would like to, like, if you guys are open to it and you have the position for me, I would love to apply to work with you. Yeah. And then that then actually ended up following through. So I guess, yeah, that's just my thoughts. I come from a very unconventional approach to job hunting, but I think, yeah, hopefully that can still provide value for people. And the biggest tip is just put yourself out there. You never know where opportunities may come from, but opportunities won't come if you
if you're not there in the first place.
If you're not there for it, yeah. Right? Yeah. So go to those events, go to those networking. If your uni's hosting a session where they're bringing on practice owners or they're bringing speakers or even specialists, anyone, just go there, say hello, introduce yourself. You never know where that may take you. I didn't know where it would take me, right? But yeah.
Even though you mentioned your pathway is a bit unconventional, I really appreciate how, like, organic it is, and just hearing through meeting these people and making these connections, it's so much more personable, and you kind of go in knowing that I'm likely to work well with this practice. Because you mentioned earlier that, you know, some people, their first day of work is the first time they've met these people in person, or they're discovering the practice. And yeah, no, I don't know where I was going with that, but I just found that really interesting, because I feel like, you know, I've just heard some new grads, like, I have a cousin who's in dentistry as well, and she just did not get along with her first practice, but it was almost too late because she had already started the job.
Yeah.
But when you're meeting these people, you can already gauge, how do I work with them, or do I vibe with them, kind of thing. Yes, I found that really
interesting. It goes both ways, right? Like, as much as they may be interviewing you, you're interviewing them. Yeah. And what is an interview, right? I think we often, again, put a lot of pressure on and a lot of stress when it comes to, like, oh, going for a job interview. It's scary, right? Like, society has made it a scary thing to go for a job interview. This is a bit of, like, a silly analogy, like, metaphor that I share. Sometimes people often laugh at me for, like, making this comparison. But I often say, like, if you think about it from a practice owner's point of view, when it comes to trying to hire someone, right, there are so many parallels to dating. Right? It's essentially like, yeah, finding your next partner, right? It's the difference between online dating, right, where your boss, if you think your practice owner, has a stack of resumes that are in there on their table or in their inbox, right? What are they essentially doing? They're swiping through them, right? Yeah. It's just, they all look more or less the same. It's just an A4 sheet of paper. It's white, it's Times New Roman, size 12 font, right? Like, it's all pretty much the same. And there's no connection to these people. It's just a sheet of paper. Oh, this person won an award, or this person attended this particular course, or this person has a you know, unique portfolio. Maybe I'll give those people a chance. And so they take it to the next step of, hey, why don't you come in for an interview, right? Compare that, right? And compare that online dating approach to the nice boy or girl that lives down the road that your family has known for years, who come and take your bins in when you guys are on holidays, or collects your mail for you and just keeps an eye out. That's the student that comes to observe at your practice, that comes, brings in a box of chocolates, you know, hangs out with the team, gets to know them. it's kind of like, okay, who are they going to choose? The person that they only know, they don't know from a bar of soap, that is just, I can only judge you from a piece of paper, to the person where, hey, I don't need to interview you because I know you.
Yeah.
I know the type of person you are. I know your work ethic. I know your attitude. I know how you vibe with the team.
That's so true.
Mm-hmm. People laugh at me when I tell them that story. And I'm like, I don't know. I see the parallels in it.
Well, I think you really highlighted the importance of building a network and forging those connections. But and also, I guess, the importance of a mentor, which we'll touch on in a second. But what sort of factors did you take into consideration when you decided, I guess, which employer you were going to swipe right on?
I think it ultimately comes down to a big part of it is, I say this all the time, your personality, right? Your first boss should be someone, I believe, that you look up to and in some ways you want to emulate, okay? Because their philosophies, like when you're joining their practice, right, you need to be aligned with their philosophies, okay? And so, yeah, you have to see, do you gel well? Do you, align with their values and their culture? In terms of, yeah, how they run their practice. So that was a big thing for me. And that extends into finding mentors as well, right? You need to be able to vibe. You need to be able to gel with this person. You need to be comfortable with them, because ultimately when you run into struggles or you run into trouble, you need to be comfortable enough to have these conversations with these people. So what I say may not resonate with everyone, and some people may disagree. Some people may think more so, okay, you know, what is the practice like? You know, a lot more of the ins and it is important, right? And you should, I'm not saying that you should ignore all of that. I think you do need to know, like, will you be busy in this practice, right? You know, will you be supported? So knowing, hey, is this a big practice or is this a small practice? Will you have other associates that are working with you on the days that you are? And especially as a new grad, that's important, right? To have other people that can bail you out if you need to on those days. What else is there? Yeah, being aware of if your books are full, the equipment that they have at that practice, that means more or less to different people, right? Some people want to be at the practice that has all the latest technology, okay? And they really care about that. Other people, you know, may not necessarily feel the need for that, or, you know, people may fall in between. You kind of have to make a list of what are your, I think some people have said it, like your wants, needs, and nice to haves. I think someone has said that as well before. I don't know if I got that correct, but it's something along that lines, right? It's like, what are your non-negotiables? What are the things that, like, you must have when you're looking for a job? And these are different for everyone. So for me personally, it was, I needed to resonate. I needed to vibe with the practice, my boss, and my mentors, right? Other people may not agree with that, right? For other people, it may be they need to have a CEREC.
Yeah, right.
Whereas for me, it's like a CEREC would be a nice to have, but I think it wouldn't be a deal breaker.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that's important.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. And like you said, depending on what each individual's circumstances or what they're most interested in will really dictate, you know, where they want to apply and where they want to work. Just bouncing off what you'd mentioned earlier, like for you, you said ensuring that you have that kind of connection with the people you're around and you resonate with those people was a big priority for you. And so the next question or next topic we kind of wanted to speak about was relating to mentors. I feel like that's a really big buzzword that gets thrown around. and we touched on it a little bit earlier as well. But what was, I guess you've explored it a little bit as well, but what was your process of finding a mentor and how do you think people should go about it? Yeah.
Look, how do we find mentors? A lot of my mentors are people that I work with,
yeah,
right? And so they're just people within the practice. And I think that's important as a new grad, is getting yourself into an environment where there are other dentists. Because if you're the solo practitioner, you are your own mentor. there's no one you can go to, right? And if you're there and there's one or two other dentists, well, then your choice is a bit more limited.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas the bigger your network, it means the more people you can start tapping into, mm-hmm. and you will realize you don't vibe with every single one of those people. Right. And so you just spend more time with the people that you do vibe with. Right? You can also find mentors externally as well. Right. So often now, everyone's so prevalent on social media, and all the people that are posting on social media, they're doing it because they have a passion for dentistry. They have a passion for sharing their work, and for, you know, engaging and connecting with the community.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they can be scary, can be daunting trying to reach out to someone on Instagram or on Facebook, but you know, you don't know unless you try. Those opportunities don't exist unless you put yourself out there for it, right? So yeah, reach out to them, and then you may learn a thing or two from them. Oftentimes they're actively sharing tips and advice, but you can go pick their brains and ask them questions. So that's another way of seeking mentorship. You can also go into looking into your network of specialists that you may refer to. Oh, right? Okay. That was something that I was encouraged to do in my first year, which I didn't really do as much as I wish I did. Mm-hmm. But I was always encouraged by my boss that on your days off, go hang out with your local specialist, because you'll learn so much from them. And also, because you're referring to them, you're now building a relationship with them. You work together with them.
Yeah.
But I think so often, and I know I'm guilty of this, is I just write a referral and then I never see the patient again. But, you know, I don't even have a relationship with that specialist either. But in a few weeks' time, this is the first time I'm actually following through on doing this, is I had a patient who was a upper molar endo that I started instrumenting, but then couldn't find MB2, and was taking me a really long time. And then I ended up talking myself out of doing it. but I essentially offered the patient, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm not going to charge you for this appointment, but I can write you a referral to see the specialist, and they can continue it, right? The patient was happy to go ahead, decided to go in to see the specialist. But I said to my patient, it's a bit of a tricky situation, but if it's okay with you, can you find an appointment with Dr. So-and-so on a Friday? Mm. Because that's my day off and I'd love to come in. And patient was like, yeah, for sure. And like, it's the way you phrase it, right? I'm like, I would love to be there for you during your appointment as well. And that way I can continue talking with the specialist so that we're completely on board with your treatment. They appreciate that, right? Yeah. Like, their dentist is coming to go watch them get treatment as well. They don't need to know that it's because you couldn't find you didn't have the skill set to do this, and that you're needing someone to bail you out. It's just, hey, the way you phrase it, I want to learn more and I want to make sure that you're getting the treatment that you deserve. And so then I sent an email to the specialist and I'm like, hey, you know, this is my patient, blah blah blah, I'm a new grad, if it's okay with you, I'd really love the opportunity to come and observe how you end up managing them. And they were like, absolutely, hey, come in, your patient's booked in on, you know, this date. You're free, like, feel free to come in and just hang out and watch. And so that's the first time I'm doing it. It's something that I hope to do more of.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are so many different ways that you can go about learning. You just need to be proactive about it. But also, yeah, coming from the perspective as well, is that it's a luxury. So treat it as such, be grateful for it, do everything that you can to essentially like pay back for it as well, right? Mm-hmm. So one thing that I am always a big believer in is just, yeah, helping out wherever you can. So if you're going to observe another dentist, do something nice, right? Mm-hmm. They're taking time out of their day to help you out. So if you can help them, if they've got something that needs to be done, if you can be like an additional assistant in the room and, you know, help out with this, that, and the other, it means that, you know, you're just being more, I guess, yeah, appreciative of the situation. Mm. Because no one wants, I was talking to one of my mentors before and he was saying that, hey, I don't mind mentoring, I like teaching, but I need to like the person. Yeah. Who's gonna want to mentor someone that they don't like?
That's very true. I think, Erica, correct me if I'm wrong, but you found one of your earliest mentors. I think you mentioned it in your episode with Dr. Ben Dang. You found one of your earliest mentors from an ADSA talk.
Oh, that's my boss, Jeff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess this is shameless plug then for all of our listeners. Make sure you tune in.
That's right. I completely left that part out of the story. Jeff was the very first. I listened during ADSA's during COVID. ADSA was running a series of webinars, right? And Jeff was invited to be a speaker, and it was on his talk on how to land the dream job. And so what happened was during the talk, he just delivered it in a way that really resonated with me, and he shared all these stories and just philosophies and outlooks and attitudes on life that I'm like, yeah, at that point in time, I really needed to hear it. And yeah. So it just struck a chord with me. And then at the end of the episode, he just said, hey, here's the Q&A box. If you've got any questions, just send them through. And I don't know what compelled me. I've never done this before. It was just some, I don't know, external power. It was meant to be. I just sent a message in the Q&A box. And I was like, oh, this isn't a question, Dr. Jeff, but I just wanted to thank you for your talk because it really resonated with me. And then he read it out loud. He's just like, oh, thanks, Erica. It's just like, add me on Facebook. Anyone else, if you guys want to like reach out, connect, just add me on Facebook. I'm more than happy to chat. And so that's all I did. That was all it was. Like, I don't think we ever exchanged any further conversation until later on when I had the opportunity to interview someone. And I was like, hey, Dr. Jeff, would you mind being like my first interviewer? And then the rest is history, right? It built from there. But yeah, ATSA, it's awesome.
Well, how fitting, he ran a talk about how to land your dream job, and here you are.
And you did. Yeah, it's all thanks to you guys.
All right, to wrap up the last section of our podcast, the final question we have that I think a lot of people are curious about, especially with you moving from Melbourne to Sydney to now being in Brisbane, how do things work for you in terms of interstate applications? And did you face any challenges with that?
Yeah, because I think we've talked a lot about that in the application process. I think one thing was moving to Brisbane wasn't so daunting for me because I'd already made that move initially from going from Melbourne to Sydney. And so I had a really nice, I guess, gentle approach to like moving out of home and into a different state. So going from living in Melbourne and then moving to Sydney for studies, that was a big change. But the beauty of moving for studies is that you're guaranteed a support network because you're going for uni, right? So your friends are guaranteed. You're going to form a family away from home. And the beauty of being in uni is that you have so much free time, that you spend so much time together, right? So that was really nice. I know going from Melbourne to Sydney in that year beforehand, my parents and I traveling up to Sydney quite a bit, like a few small trips, day trips, just to get familiarity with the city because we didn't really know it that well. And so understanding, okay, where things are, where would be a good place to try, you know, finding a place to stay, familiarizing, just with the ins and outs of the city, right? And so I think because I'd had that experience having gone through that initial interstate move, then moving to Brisbane was essentially, okay, I've done it once, this is now the second time of doing it. And so in that last year leading up to my official move to Brisbane, and even deciding if I wanted to move to Brisbane or not, I did a lot of little trips with my parents just to see, okay, what is the city like, where are things located, where are the different practices, what would the travel and the commute be like, all of that just to familiarize and just get used to it rather than just, not knowing and jumping straight into it. And then, going from there. One thing I will say, and I know Dr. Novneel Kashyap has made posts about this in the past on DPI for people that are moving interstate or particularly moving rural, is that there's a big rental crisis. And I know because it was difficult to find accommodation, and apparently it's even more difficult when going rurally. And so a important consideration that he advises new grads is to ensure that you have your accommodation locked in before you sign a contract, because it's actually difficult and renting is expensive. Like, it's not something that I think we should discredit and think, oh, you know, main priority is a job. Like, if you're relocating, you're completely uprooting your life and going somewhere else, and you need to be able to find somewhere to stay and settle down. And I think that's an important consideration to have. That was I remember, like, in my, when I first started working, I came up a week before my first day of work. I lived in a hotel. I stayed in a hotel for a week because the day that I could actually move into my home was my first day of work. So it was January 16th. It was a monumental day. I was like, I had a full day of work and then I had to come home and unpack all my boxes.
Crazy.
It was crazy, but it was just the way that it worked out. So that was probably one of the biggest challenges of, yeah, having to relocate and start work at the same time. Other people may approach it differently. I'd probably advise people actually relocate first before you actually start working to have that better transition rather than doing it all on the same day. But yeah, initially, all through uni, I thought I would work rurally. Mm. Something that I realized, yeah, like that working rurally wouldn't be feasible because a lot of the people that I knew that were going to work rurally were going either with some other friends, so they would be housemates together, or they were going with a partner, so they had a guaranteed support network. Whereas I figured out if I was going to move rurally, not only would I be in a rural city, but I would be going alone, and I realized that's going to be really hard.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the decisions where I said, okay, I'm actually going to rule out moving regionally or moving rurally for work. Yeah. And then Brisbane was a nice, I guess, yeah, not I wouldn't say a compromise because that's definitely not what it was, but it was, I didn't want to work in Metro Melbourne or Metro Sydney just because of how chaotic and busy it was. And so Brisbane was a nice middle ground between those two extremes.
You put a really like realistic lens on that, I think, because a lot of people when you talk to them are like, oh yeah, I wouldn't mind trying rural or regional, just because they talk about the experiences or the kind of dentistry you get involved with out there might be a little bit different. But the whole support network thing, I think, is something I did not think about at all. But me having relocated from Sydney to Gold Coast kind of thing, I realised that, yeah, I have a support network, but that's only my dental friends. And that was kind of given to me, you know. Now, once I start, if I go elsewhere, you have to find the time to do all of that. Yeah.
I'm definitely keep going.
No, keep going.
I was just gonna say I'm definitely guilty of saying what Martina just mentioned, like, oh, rural sounds so nice, I'll definitely do that when I'm done. But thinking about it now, like, I rely so heavily on my support system here that having to go from 100 to basically like zero, that is definitely very daunting.
It's a big change. Yeah. It's hard. Another part of it as well is that, again, coming from a realistic lens, if you're going to work rurally, it means a lot of travel time. Right? So it means if you want to come back to the city or like visit family, or you want to come back on the weekends, oftentimes that may mean like, you know, 2-3 hour drives, if not more. I can't drive for more than 45 minutes without starting to get sleepy. So I realized realistically, that's not going to happen.
So funny. So thank you, Erica, so much for spending your morning with us. We really appreciate it. You've shared so many golden nuggets that I myself, and I think Andrew can agree, like, we weren't really open to these ideas previously or hadn't thought about it before. So thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you. Yeah,
you've shared so much. Like, we've gone through, you know, the importance of shadowing. I think one of the big things we've covered as well is being proactive, but also really understanding who you are as a person. Like, that bled into so much of the different topics that we spoke about. So, yeah, really great and valuable insights. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me. It's so fun just being on, and daunting as well, being on the other side of the, essentially, like, the podcasting team in the hot seat, right? But you guys are wonderful. Thank you for having me. It was really fun to chat with everyone. I hope that it provides some insight and some value to all your listeners as well. You guys are doing a great job with this platform as well. So I'm excited to see the rest of the episodes, and you guys have too.
Oh, we appreciate that. Well, thank you, Dr. Erica, for joining us. And thank you to our listeners again for joining us for another episode. So until next time, keep exploring,
keep questioning,
and brace yourself for more.